You need one of these. Okay, good afternoon, everybody, and welcome again. For some reason, the microphone is working today, so that will save something on my voice, which is just as well. So today we're going to have our second look at graphs and searching, and we're going to look at some applications of depth-first search. DFS has some very interesting properties which can be exploited in quite subtle ways. We're just going to see one of that kind of situation, but I'm going to start with some stuff that's rather easier, and then we'll move to the rather subtle and to my mind, rather more interesting situation in terms of the subtlety of the situation, shall we say. Okay, so just a reminder of DFS, we can express it in this convenient recursive way, and what does this do? It's really very simple. We start at the vertex of the graph, okay? We maintain a record of have we seen a vertex or not. We start at any unseen vertex, okay? And we call DFS from that vertex, okay? So this is now invoked. The minute that's invoked, it says, okay, I've seen this vertex, okay? So you know now that if you make a call DFS from a vertex V, you won't make that call ever again. It's one call and one call only. And because of this outer loop here, every vertex gets called DFS from V once. Okay. It's called at least once, and it's called at most once, so it's called exactly once. Okay. And as soon as you make that call, you now say, okay, find an adjacent vertex to V, okay? And if you haven't seen it before, well, what do? You invoke DFS from that vertex, okay? And of course, that now says I've seen this, and it says, okay, look, if there's an adjacent vertex to this, if there is and it's not been seen before, go there. Call DFS to that vertex, right? Keep going. Well, the graph is finite, so you can't keep going forever. Eventually, you run out of choices. Either there's no adjacent vertex, or all the adjacent vertices have been seen before. Okay, so at that stage, so when you dot dot dot, okay, you get to a vertex from which there is no call to be made. So at that point, that recursive invocation finishes, and so it backtracks to the previous vertex, and that says, okay, any more adjacent vertices, if there are any. Okay, you call from there, and you just do the same thing, keep going until you run out of options. Now back up, and eventually you're going to get to here, and so on. Okay, clear idea. That's why it's called depth-first search. You go as far as possible before you backtrack. And if you express it like this, it looks like a complicated thing to organize, but it's actually, my apologies, very simple thing to organize as a recursive procedure call. Okay? And we'll follow this version of DFS. In our thinking, okay. And we saw last time that if we represent the graph as an adjacency list representation, then the runtime of this is theta of n plus m, where as always n is the number of vertices, m is the number of edges. Okay, so very nice and straightforward. Okay. Now, just to remind you some basic definitions, which I hope you've already seen elsewhere, but as a reminder, if nothing else, a tree is simply a connected graph without any cycles. By connected, I mean that this is disregarding direction of edges. So see it as an undirected graph, okay, and ask, you know, Can I get from any one vertex to any other? If yes, you may be a tree, but the second condition is that there are no cycles. You can't get back to where you started just by following edges, okay? And in computing, we tend to use rooted trees. That's to say we identify a particular vertex that's been the root of the tree. So you think of, that's where I start, so to speak, and then it leads to others and so on, okay? Well, surprise, surprise, a forest is a collection of trees, okay? What else would it be, okay? You know, come on. I suppose you could be perverse and define it as something else, but, you know, okay. And now, a DFS forest is really what we get if we maintain a record of the edges we have traversed from the various calls of our DFS from a given vertex. By traversing an edge, I mean that, you know, if we were, so we were here, let's say, and we said, okay, there's a vertex that's adjacent to me. Has it been visited before? If it has, I haven't traversed the edge. I don't go there, okay? If it's not been visited before, then I make the call and I go there. So I've traversed the edge. Is that clear? Okay. So if we maintain a record of the vertices visited and edges traversed in that visit, what we get is a tree, okay? And here's a little example, okay? So if we took this graph here and did a depth-first search of it, well, we might make the call. We could call DFS from any vertex, but if they're numbered 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, let's not be perverse. Let's just visit them in that order. Okay, I mean, you know, be silly to do otherwise. Well, you call DFS from 0, all right? And so that's our initial vertex in our little tree that we're building now as a record of the traversal of the graph. Okay, and at 0, we see what is adjacent to us. Well, 1 is adjacent to 0, and it hasn't yet been visited, so we can go there, okay? So we go there, and now we mark it as being seen, of course. And at 2, are there any options? Well, 2 is adjacent to 1 and 5, so let's say we go to 1, because 1 hasn't been visited yet, so we go there, okay? There. Now, once we're at 1, we look at the adjacent vertices to 1. Well, there's only 1, and that's 0, but that's already been visited, so we don't go there. Therefore, we don't traverse that edge, okay? And there are no more options at 1, so that call finishes, and we backtrack to 2 and ask, any more edges, any more adjacent vertices? And at 2, we see that 5 is adjacent to 2, and has not yet been visited, so we go there, okay? And at 5, any vertices that you can go to? Well, 5 has no edges going out of it at all, so the call now finishes at 5. We backtrack to 2. Any more edges from 2? Well, we looked at 1, we looked at 5, no other edges from 2, so that backtracks to 0. At 0, any more edges to look at? Well, you've got to 4, and that has not been seen, so you go there, and at 4, you could go to 5, but that has been seen, so you don't go there. And now that backtracks back to 0. Any more edges from 0? Yes, from 0 to 5, but 5 has been seen, so you don't go there. And now there are no more edges to look at, so that's finished. So DFS from 0 has now finished completely. Okay, and we're now back into the outer loop of the top-level procedure. And it says, okay, go to 1, has that been seen? Yes, so ignore it. 2, it's been seen. 3, no, it hasn't been seen. So you make a call of DFS from 3, and there's only one place to go from 3, which is to 6. That hasn't been seen, so you go there. At 6, you could go to 5, but that's been seen, so you don't go there. There are no other options, so that finishes. You go back to 3. No other, well, there's an edge to 1. My apologies, I should have done that first, but never mind. There's an edge to 1, but 1 has been seen before, so you don't go there. And now there are no more edges, so that's finished. And now we were at 3, we look at 4 in the outer loop, that's been seen, so you don't invoke a call. 5 has been seen, 6 has been seen, so we've finished our entire search. Okay, very simple illustration. And I did suggest to you last time that you trace an execution of DFS on a small graph like this. Just draw your own little graph and trace it. It's the best way to understand algorithms of this kind. Just follow the process of evolution of the algorithm. You can maybe on the side a little list of what I've seen before, if you can't, you know, to avoid forgetting. But it's a very simple process. Okay, so when that's finished, clearly what we have in these structures is two, well, in this case, two trees, which correspond to the way in which you explore the graph. Okay. So an invocation of DFS from zero gives us a tree showing all the vertices you can reach from zero, okay, and nothing else. And likewise, an invocation of DFS from three and any other vertex. Okay. These trees are not unique, of course. Had we invoked DFS starting at one, we would have got a differently shaped tree, but it would still have this property of it's everything reachable from one and whatever. Okay. Now, if we go to an undirected graph situation now for a slightly different application, but somewhat related, just remind you that a set of vertices of the graph is said to be connected, providing whenever you pick any two vertices in your set C, there's a path between them. And because this is an undirected graph, we don't worry about the direction of travel. Okay. So that's the simple idea. If we have a directed graph and we want to maintain, respect the edges, then we call such a component strongly connected, because it's not enough that there's a path from V to W, there must also be a path from W to V to be placed in the same strongly connected component. It's a more complicated condition on graphs. But we'll just look at the simpler situation of undirected graphs for now. Okay. A connected component of G then is just a connected set which is as big as possible. You can't add any more vertices to it. If you try to add another vertex, there would be no path. Okay. Very simple idea. Okay. And we say a graph is connected if and only if it has exactly one connected component. Okay. Again, very basic, I hope reasonably familiar definitions to most, if not all of you. Okay. If you haven't seen this before, then just make sure you familiarize yourself with them, draw a few pictures, a few graphs, and you'll get the idea very quickly. Okay, now, simple observation, each vertex of an undirected graph is going to be in exactly one connected component. Quick proof, suppose you've got a vertex V, which belongs to, say, this connected component, okay? So it goes to those guys. So that means there's a path from V to everything in here, and vice versa, because it's an undirected situation. And suppose it also belongs to this connected component here, okay? Well, anything in here you can get to there, and you can get from there to anything in there. So from anything in here, you can get to anything in there. They're in the same component by definition. They weren't two different components in the first place, right? End of proof. Okay. That simple, okay? Yeah? It's nothing clever. That's a trivial consequence of the definition. Okay. So now, for each vertex V of an undirected graph, then the connected component that contains V, you can get it just by looking at all vertices you can reach from V. Okay. Because it's an undirected situation, you don't need to worry about going back to V. Okay. If there's a path from V to W, there's a path from W to V. So again, simple proof of that, I invite you to do your own proof. Okay. But if I want to find the connected component of V, all I need to do is find all the vertices I can reach from V. Two-line proof, okay, if you want to be really tedious about it. Okay. I invite you to do that. Okay, and now simple claim. For an undirected graph G, if you call DFS from vertex V, then what you're going to visit are exactly all those vertices which are reachable from V. Just, you know, proof is a very simple induction, if you like, on the way that DFS works. You know, just look at the way it works. It, you know, it just checks, can I go there? If I can, I do. The only way it doesn't go is that I've seen that already. So you're going to get to see every vertex you can reach from V once you invoke DFS from V. Okay. So this gives us now a very simple procedure for finding all the connected components of an undirected graph. Okay. We just modify our search procedure just to record the components and put vertices in the appropriate components. So we can just initialize our visit array as usual. We can now, I've said print new component. Of course, if you're writing this to be used in other software, you would replace that print statement by something that updates the data structure, you know, creates a new component and puts it on the new data structure and so on, okay? So this is just to avoid having to create lots of new data structures, okay? So the minute we've called DFS from V, V has never been seen before, remember, otherwise you wouldn't make this call, okay? So V, we're just starting a component for V, okay? So a new component, and we call a connector component from V to find everything it can reach, and we make visited V true as usual, and now by print V, I mean, of course, put V in the current component that you're building, okay? If you want to use this structure in further software, obviously printing it is not used to you, but again, just, oh, my point, God, I keep doing that, I do apologize, okay? And now we just proceed to explore from V, and everything that you reach during this call is going to be kept in this current component, right? The only time you say, oh, it's a new component is when this search initiator V has totally finished, and therefore there's nothing left that's reachable from V. So you found the entire connector component of V, okay? And now you can start a new component from the outer loop, okay? So a very simple procedure, which does the job very nicely, very efficiently. Connector components have very many applications, which you know, I invite you to think of for yourselves. There's now a very interesting question about, what about the strongly connected components of a directed graph? Okay, that is a much more subtle situation. If you can put aside, say, half an hour or 15 minutes, try and think of an efficient algorithm for finding the strongly connected components of a directed graph. Okay. If you succeed, I congratulate you. That's if you succeed really. Okay. Not, you know, you think you succeeded. You know you succeeded. Okay. If you're going to do this, don't look at the last exercise sheet, because there is something connected to this. Okay. It's a very much more difficult situation to deal with efficiently. That is, you can do it inefficiently. That's of no interest. Okay. We do it as efficiently as this. Obviously, the runtime of this is just the runtime of our basic search procedure. Okay. And for the strongly connected situation, we want the same runtime. Much more tricky. Okay. Now, I want to move on to the application of DFS, which is more subtle than these two fairly straightforward, easy applications. Okay. And actually, to be honest, The application we just saw for connector components, you could just as well have used BFS as your search method. It wouldn't make any difference. Okay. Why might you prefer BFS or DFS if you're implementing these algorithms? Well, if you think about BFS, it's got to maintain a record of everything adjacent to V where you are just now, okay? Because it's got to look at them all, okay, just now. And that tends, if your graph has very high connectivity, you tend to build up very large intermediate data structures by that call. Okay. So that can lead to quite an intensive demand on memory. Whereas DFS just says, find another one for me, and I'll go there now. Okay. It doesn't say find them all now. It just says find one, I'll go to it if I can. Otherwise, forget it. So one weighs up those situations. On the other hand, if you have an application which requires that you find, say, the shortest path from where you are to some vertex you're trying to get to, then DFS is not going to do it for you, obviously. Okay. BFS will do it for you, but DFS will not. Okay. So there are reasons why you might choose one over the other, even when they both are applicable. Right, so let's now go to this other application, which I want to discuss in some detail, because the one thing I want to do with this is say, okay, we have a situation for which we want to develop an algorithm. You're the first person in the world facing this problem. How on earth might you even think up of an algorithm? That's just an inefficient one. You know, inefficient algorithms are 10 a penny. Don't buy. Okay, what's the point? Okay, we want an efficient algorithm for this. So let's describe the problem first, and then look at how to attack it, okay? So suppose we have 10 tasks of any kind, doesn't matter what they are, But there are dependencies between the tasks. So task zero must be done before task one because task one has requirements that only task zero can supply. Okay. And likewise, tasks one and two must be done before three and so on. Okay. So you can easily imagine loads of applications for this kind of situation. Okay. Now, the information as presented there is, of course, quite difficult to take on board. Reading all those requirements is hard to keep track of. And it obviously cries out for a graph representation. Each task is a vertex, and if there's a dependency, task A must be done before task B, draw a directed edge from task A to task B. Very natural, right? Okay, so let's agree to do that. Then the question we want to ask is, can we schedule the tasks sequentially in order to still meet these requirements? Okay. You've got a sequential processor, so you've got to say, okay, do this one now, now this one, now this one, now this one, now this one. And the ordering you have chosen does meet all the constraints. Okay. And you want to do this efficiently. Well, you want to find out if it's possible. Maybe it's not possible. Okay. And if it's possible, then find a way to order them. There may be more than one. We're happy to accept any one way that works. Okay. So this motivates the following definition on graphs. Topological order on a graph, we're now talking entirely about directed graphs. Okay, the undirected thing was just to illustrate that simple application. We're now always about directed graphs. Okay. A topological order on the graph is an ordering of the vertices. We choose to order the vertices. This is first, this is second, this is third, this is etc. Okay. We will indicate that chosen order by this curly less than just to distinguish it from normal ordering of, say, integers and so on. Okay, and the requirement we have, of course, that's easy to do, except there's a constraint, which is that whenever there's an edge from V to W, then in your order, V must come before W. Okay, so you're respecting edges. Okay, and if you think about it just for a second, that's exactly what we want in order to schedule our tasks. If we model them in the way I said, then a correct schedule is one that is basically a topological order on the graph that we've used to represent the problem. Okay. So that's fine. We've made a slight bit of progress. We've just rephrased the problem. So now the question is, how do you know if a graph has such an order? And if it has one, how do you find it efficiently? Okay. So let's move on to that. Well, before that, let me just look at the example, and then we'll address the problem. My apologies. So our original set of constraints, if we model them as a graph, this would be one way to picture the graph. Of course, you can picture it in lots of ways, but that pictures them correctly. And if you look at that and now ask, does it have a topological order? In some ways, this information is easier to take on board than the previous one with all the words and so on. But it's not entirely obvious if this has an order or not. It actually does. Okay. It has more than one, in fact. Okay. We'll come back to how we can find this out. How do we know this? Okay. So let's look at the general situation again. Okay. Let's first of all make a very simple observation. If a directed, so a digraph is just directed graph. It's just, lazy speak. Okay. If a directed graph has a cycle, it can't possibly have a topological order on it. And let's see that very simply. Suppose you start from V1, goes to V2, to Vn minus 1, to Vn, and now back to V1. That's your cycle, okay? That's what is meant by cycle, after all, okay? Well, then, because there's an edge from V1 to V2, whatever order you're going to build on this graph, you're going to have V1 less than V2. You've got no choice about that, right? And you've got no choice about V2 being less than V3, and so on up to Vn minus 1. Moving to the Greek alphabet there. Okay? But hang on a minute, I think you're ahead of me, I hope you are. There's an edge from Vn to V1. So you have no choice but to make Vn less than V1. Duh. Hang on a minute. There is no notion of order, strict order that is, that allows a thing to be strictly less than itself. Think again, right? Yeah? So if there's a cycle, there's just no way you're going to find an order. Okay. Now, when you make an observation like this, which is really very nice, a very simple test, the first question, so that's a necessary condition. You ask yourself, is it also sufficient? Right? In other words, does it characterize the situation I want to characterize? So is it true that if the graph has no cycles, so we've removed the obvious way in which it cannot have a topological order, if it has no cycles, am I guaranteed that there will be a topological order? Okay. Maybe I, maybe I'm not. Okay. The beautiful thing is, yes, you are in this situation. Okay. So a directed graph has a topological order if and only if it is a directed acyclic graph. As I say, there are no cycles. Okay. Well, let's do the proof of this, and I want to do the proof in a way that's going to suggest to us an algorithm, which will motivate some definitions to come. Okay. Then I'm not going to start with inductions and all that kind of stuff. I'm just going to do a proof that says I'm a working person trying to get to grips with this situation. Let me try and figure out what might be happening. Okay. Okay, so we have KK Graph Theory Enterprises, Inc. Okay, reasonable prices charged, ask for a quote. Multiple tasks get a discount. You come along with your graph and you say, does it have a topological order? Oh, and by the way, I want this by a quarter past because I've got to go and meet a client. I go, oh, well, it's big, isn't it? You know, what am I going to do? All right, so you give me your graph, okay? Blah, big blob, okay? Yeah? Okay. So, oof, has it got an order? Oh, God. I know what. Let me start from any vertex. What the hell? Okay? Let me start from V1, okay? If it's got an order at all, I've got to put V1 somewhere, okay? Well, all right, what would stop me from putting V1, say, as last in the order? Well, if there's an edge from V1 to somewhere, it can't be last. Whatever it's got to be, and it can't be last, okay? So if there's an edge, okay, let's follow the edge. Because I can't decide where to put this in the order until I've decided where to put that. Yeah? No choice about this, right? So follow the consequence, okay? Clear? All right? Let's say that's V2 there. Well, if you asked that question before, surely you should ask it again. Can I decide where to put V2 yet? Well, if there's an edge out of V2, I can't. If there is, I'm all right. Okay. So suppose there's an edge. Okay? Duh, all right. Okay, I keep going. Now, remember, this is a finite graph. Okay? So if I keep going long enough, what has to happen? One of two things, right? Either I run out of places to go, there are no more edges, I've reached a vertex which has nowhere to go, okay? So I've got to a vertex here, and there are no edges out of Vn, I've hit the jackpot! I keep hoping to do that with real money, but I can only do it with chalk and blackboard, so, you know, I keep practicing. Because if there are no edges going out of Vn, that means there are no constraints on it, and I can put it last in the order. I'm trying to build this order, remember, okay? Yeah? So if there's no edges, there are no constraints, so you might as well put it last. And if you do that, when you do that, you can then delete V from your graph and say, look, I've dealt with it, deleted and any edges going to it. You don't need to worry about it ever again. Yeah? Clear? You don't look too happy about this. I'm going to get that cane. Now, I want smiles. Come on, you should be impressed by this. You get this for free, remember? I'm not charging you yet. I'll send you the bill later, okay? Yeah? That's one thing, that's a great thing. Because if that happens, I can deal with Vn, and now I have to worry about the rest of the graph. We'll come back to that in a minute, okay? The other thing that can happen is I get back to a vertex I've seen before on this traveling of the graph. Well, if that happens, what do I know? The graph has a cycle. And I tell the client, sorry, mate, it can't be done. Yes? And here's why. I can give them the cycle. Okay? Because they're not very trustworthy people, these things, you know, they want to prove. Okay?
Yeah.
Okay. So one of two things will happen. Okay? Either I can deal with something in the order and now worry about the rest of the graph, or I know there's no order to find and report that. Okay. So that's a proof of this theorem, by the way. We've just proved that theorem, basically. Okay. But let's turn this into a useful algorithm. Okay. Now, one way you could do this as an algorithm to say, well, run this thing. When you get to a terminal vertex, okay, put it, so maintain an order so far, okay, and whenever you get to a terminal vertex, put it as, you know, you've got the order so far, this is last, next. Now put the vertex you've just found as terminal there, okay, delete the vertex, start the whole process over again, okay? That would be the idiot's way to do this. None of you thought of doing that, did you? Now, you're all smart, okay, yeah? Why? Because, you see, you've done all this exploration of the graph, and you say, oh, delete that, and now go back to the beginning. Come on, you know? You have a lot of information. You've got to hear from this. Why don't you use the information, right? Obviously, it's stupid to just delete and then go back, okay? Now, in a sense, also, delete, well, do you really want to destroy your data structure? Do you want to waste time deleting? Really, all you need to know is to say, look, mark this vertex as it's been dealt with. You don't need to worry about it. It's effectively not there. Even though it's in the data structure, it's not really there, right? Is that clear? So we need a color for saying, don't worry about this. It's been dealt with. It's fine. If you ever see this vertex, just ignore it. It's been deleted, right? Let's call that color black. It says, I've put it on there, it's fine, okay? We need a way to know if we have found a cycle, okay? Now, it's not enough to say you found a cycle if you see a vertex that's been visited, right? Why? Because maybe that was visited on a previous exploration of the graph, a previous search, which finished anyway, okay? Or maybe it's a black vertex. Which case you don't need to worry about it, okay? So we need a way to distinguish between unseen vertices of any kind, so they've never been seen before, in which case if you see them now, that's fine, that's not a problem clearly. Vertices which we have seen during this exploration, but not dealt with, in which case if you see them now, that's a problem, that's a cycle, okay? And vertices with which we have dealt with, okay? So that suggests another two colors, okay? White is for vertices that have just not been seen at all. They're waiting exploration. Okay? And gray, the ones which you're seeing during this exploration of the graph. And if you do see them before you've dealt with them, well, there's a cycle. You're in trouble. Well, the client is in trouble. You're happy because you've finished, yeah? Okay. So. So then the proposal would be this. I start with my vertices all colored white. Okay. I initiate a DFS from any vertex, it doesn't matter. Okay. The minute you initiate DFS from that vertex, you color it gray. Right? And that keeps going until at the moment you backtrack. If during your exploration you haven't seen another a gray vertex, so if you're here and you do a DFS and you see this is a gray vertex, you know that you got to here by a path, okay, yeah? And there's an edge back to it, my God, that's a cycle, end of story, okay? On the other hand, if the way that you can't get back to it is because there are either no edges or all you can see are these black things that you've already dealt with, you know that that's not a problem, okay? There's no cycle to worry about. So just before you're about to backtrack from here, you put this onto your order, okay, and you make it black and say, from now on, don't worry about this vertex. If you see it again, just ignore it. Okay? Is that Everybody kind of followed the reasoning there, okay? It's not totally watertight because I haven't proved various assertions, but you can see how this has a real good chance of success. If the claims I've made are indeed valid, then I do have an efficient algorithm because all I need to do is initiate DFS on the graph and just maintain these three different colored states, which obviously isn't going to cost me much. Okay? And the beauty of it is the following. If the graph has a topological order, I will build it as my, I explore the graph, and I can report it. If it hasn't got a topological order, the algorithm isn't going to blow up on me. It's going to find that fact, and I can report it. Okay. All right, so that motivates the following definitions for us. Okay. Let me denote my graph as the usual thing. Pick a vertex from the graph and consider DFS from G. Okay, we'll call V finished. Okay, if the call from DFS from vertex V, that recursive call has actually finished. Remember, every vertex gets one call like this. Okay, so if that's finished, then we call the vertex V finished. Okay, all right. Then observe the following thing: vertices can be in one of three states. Not yet visited, so that's the white vertices, which we've motivated. Okay. Visited but not yet finished, so that's the gray ones. Okay. And finished, and those are the black ones. Okay. That's exactly this discussion here. Okay. Just making it a little bit more formal here. What did I mean by you finished? Well, precisely that this recursive call has completed. Okay. That's the only time you can make a vertex black. Okay. And now, a lemma which we can formulate now quite rigorously, okay? Let me take the situation I had, the graph G and the vertex V of the graph, okay? And consider during the execution of DFS of the graph, the moment when DFS from vertex G, V, okay, is started. Okay, so we've just initiated that call, okay? So the execution of the algorithm is, of course, just a sequence of such calls. Let's just look at that sequence where this call has been made. And it's made only once, so this is a well-defined notion, okay? Then I claim the following fact. For all vertices W, if W is white at this just at this time, okay, and it's reachable from V, then W will become black before V does. Okay. Secondly, if W is gray, then V is reachable from W, okay? Now, I'm going to leave that lemma for you to think about and see why it's intuitively true, okay, as an exercise. The notes discuss why it's intuitively true. I don't give a formal proof because it would take some setting up to do in strict formality, but the intuition behind it is reasonably straightforward, and if you cannot see why it should be intuitively true, you haven't understood the notion of depth of search and the notion of the coloring of vertices. So that's a good test for you. Okay. Understanding is not just being able to recite the notes. That's not understanding. That's memory. Understanding is being able to explain them in some way that makes sense to other people. Okay. So I'll leave that with you to think about very carefully. Okay. So take a little while on that, and then look at the explanation in the notes if you. Not sure, okay. All right. So we're going to use this lemma now to justify the intuitive argument that I had here, okay. What I was really saying here was, as soon as something becomes black, put it on the order, okay. If you translate that into the situation we have here, it says, if you give me a directed graph VE, I'll define the order on V as follows. V is less than W if during the execution of DFS on the graph, W becomes black before V does. That's exactly what I was doing there, okay? All right, so now we have the following theorem. Suppose G is a directed acyclic graph, okay? Then this order that I've just defined is actually a topological order on the graph. Now, to prove this, what do I have to verify? I have to verify that if I have an edge, the order respects the edge, okay? So let me pick an edge VW of the graph, okay, and consider the moment that DFS from vertex V is called. Okay. There are three possibilities at that point. W may be already black. Well, in that case, V will become black, of course, only after this call. The only way you get a vertex becomes black is because the DFS from it has been completed. And we've only just called it. And at the moment of call, W was black anyway. So in our definition, W would come after V. So that's fine. It satisfies the requirement. You know, VW being an edge means that in our order, V must be less than W. Okay. So if this is the situation that pertains, there's no problem. We're fine. Another possibility is that W is white, okay? Well, then by the first part of the previous lemma, we know that W will be black before V is because of the presence of the edge, VW, okay? We know that when you initiate the call from V, you will get to initiate a call from W, and you won't get to finish the call from V until the call from W has finished, in which case W will become black before V does. So that will be fine. Again, W will be placed after V in our order as defined at the top there. Okay? And there's only now one remaining possibility, which is that W is gray at the moment of call of DFS from V. Okay? But then, you see, if W is gray, there is a path from W, by the second part of the lemma, there's a path from W to V. That's by the second part of our lemma, which I invited you to think about. Okay? But wait a minute, there's an edge from V to W. Oh dear. What's that? It's a cycle, right? Can't be directed to the cyclic graph. Yeah, if you see that. Okay. So that case can't occur if you really have a directed acyclic graph. Or putting this more positively, this proof is actually much more powerful than just proving that theorem there. It says, here's a way to detect cycles. You run this process. If you only ever see cases one and two of this situation, you'll be fine. You'll run to completion. Okay. If you ever see case three, that is a proof that you have a cycle in your graph. And you can report there is no topological order possible. Okay. If you run to completion, that is a proof that there is no cycle. Why? Because this proof says the order you built is indeed a topological order in your graph, and we know that the graph can't have a topological order if it has a cycle. Okay. So we prove both ways of the implication here. Okay. Very nice. Okay. I suggest to you that this is quite a nice bit of reasoning here. So this is the formal justification, modulo the lemma, which I've left you to think about, of this intuitive development here. All we've done in this definition here is formalize this notion that I outlined at the start. Okay. Okay. So now we can put the whole thing into pseudocode, and all we're doing is just following that definition. We initialize every vertex to be white. Then we start our DFS. We also initialize an empty linked list. We're going to put the vertices in order of discovery of, say, you can put it onto the order now as last, okay? So as vertices become black, they go onto the front of the list. So that will build you the order going from first to last in as being your order, okay? Once this whole call is finished, we can just return or print L. That's our order, okay? If we find the cycle, the call will never finish because we'll report a problem and we'll exit before getting to this thing here. Okay. So now the action takes place in the DFS from a given vertex. The minute you call DFS from V, the first thing you do is make it gray. Okay? And now you look at the adjacent vertices to it and you examine the possibilities. Suppose W is an adjacent vertex to V. If W is currently white, that's fine, not a problem at all. You simply initiate a DFS from that vertex. Okay? And that, of course, will immediately be set to gray and so on. Okay? The other possibility is that W is gray. You fall into case three of that proof. This is a proof that there is a cycle in your graph, and so you report the problem and you just stop. The other possibility is that W is black, but that's the situation we say it's effectively deleted. Do nothing. Okay. Yep. So very simple implementation. And now when that loop is finished, that means that your invocation of DFS from V has completely finished, no more recursive calls, etc. So you can now set the state of V to be black and put V onto your list, at the front of the list. Okay? So very simple. Okay, now, out of the kindness of my heart, I did a demo for you, and this was done slide by slide. So lap it up. Now, if only you could see it, of course. You can see it now, yes? Okay. This is our original graph, but presented differently. This is a more helpful way to see it. You see, if you think about it, if a graph has a topological order, then you can present it in a kind of layered way. Layer one here, you can order this any way you like. Oh, my, didn't want to do that. Okay, sorry. Yeah. And then there are edges from layer one to layer two, layer two to layer three, and so on. But only edges going from left to right, okay? So you could order 8 and 6 any way you like as being the first two. Then 7 is the... Oh, God, what have I done? Oh, I know, I started the wrong... My apologies. Okay. It was... I opened there's a time door and there's one... Okay, never mind. Let it do that, okay? You can see the idea, okay? Yeah? So I'll go from... Okay, now, initiate from 0, it's gray. Goes to 1, it's gray. Go to 3, final, black, back to 1. Nothing else to look at, only a black one, so black. 0, same. Okay, now, 2, same. 4, it's again only black that you can see. 5, you can see 2 black, but that's okay. Now, onto 6, it's more interesting. There's one vertex there that you can go to 7. From 7, you can go to 9. But from 9, there's only black that you can see, so it becomes black. Now 7 has that status, 6 gets that status, and finally 8. Okay? Yeah? There you are. That's all done slide by slide, you know? That's, you know, I spare no effort for you lot. Okay? I hope that was instructive. Yeah? I invite you to do a simulation of the algorithm on some other graph of your own devising. Okay? It's the best way to understand these ideas. Okay, well, let's finish 4 minutes early. Thank you for your attention. See you next time. Okay. It was meant to be very simple because the whole thing was... God, let me just get rid of this, sorry. Just realize.
More time consuming to do. So that was the idea.
So I agree the program part is very simple. Even so, some of it is not. But, you know, I appreciate that, you know, if one wants to challenge about the programming, that wasn't doing it, but it wasn't meant to be.
For that, I share the same thing, and the program part was quite technical, but for my reason, why I when I was doing program in seventh grade, I was not quite so bad, but to implement the modification and stuff like that for a large number. So
I did the analysis.